The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that.
I'm on her side, and I don't know exactly what her side is.
I think you're totally spot on with that.
I sound inept just to help you out.
It's been a rough week, thanks to your advice.
Are you a regular listener to this program?
As much as I can be.
There's your problem.
I would not ever disagree with you because you're so smart. You have a lot of answers to a lot of things.
You don't want to listen to me on the radio.
So what do I do?
I can't give you any direction.
Thank you for empowering me. I needed that.
I'm losing you, buddy. I don't know what you're trying to say.
Well, do you know somebody who does?
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Everybody asks, you know, what do you think of the hardest years of life? The teen years where you're struggling to find out who you are and you got one foot in childhood and one foot into adulthood? No. Nope. I think the years between 50 and 70 are the hardest. Because you're still being asked to do things, but yet you're not old enough to turn them down. I want to turn them down, but I'm not old enough. Because then somebody will say, oh, how old are you? 85? What are you afraid to go out? I just ask, well, what time is it over? Will it be done by 8:30? Good to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program Doctor Is In Monday through Friday. This is the Monday variant of the Doctor Is In. This is where I take a look at the stack and the scroll on the phone. I'll tell you what, it's taken me a long time to master a smartphone. You're talking to a guy who for years wore my garage door opener because I wanted people to think I had a pager, that I was cool enough to have a pager. So I take a look at these e-persons. I got this. This stack is now about a quarter of an inch thick. I'm trying to get through as many of them as I can. I got a couple of very touching ones coming up here shortly. But we will get to those. But first, the opening, as always, Manilog. I'm trying to choose between a couple that I had here. I guess all you can do about that now is pray. You heard that? And aren't you tempted to say, well, wait, prayer is the most powerful thing I got. And it's what I should do first. So when somebody says, all you can do about that now is pray, I don't think they're always putting prayer as a last resort. I think what they could be saying, at least some of the time, is you're powerless to do anything about this earthbound-wise, if you want to put it that way. In other words, they won't listen to reason. They don't want to come around. You've tried. You've tried getting through to them. You have done what you can to be charitable or kind or understanding or apologetic or everything you can think of to make the situation better. And it's not only not gotten better, it's gotten worse. So you describe the situation to someone and some litany of what you've done, and you hear about the only thing you can do is pray. That doesn't mean that somehow you are resigned to prayer, that you have to put up prayer as a last resort. You tried everything, now I guess you just pray. No, it means that all along you were probably praying, and all the other things you were trying to do in addition to prayer didn't work out, and so now you pray alone. Doesn't mean you pray any less, and it doesn't mean you're saying to God, well, God, I'm turning to you now because I did everything I knew how to do and none of that worked, so I'll just turn to you. That's not what you're saying. What you're saying is, I have prayer. I did pray. I will pray. But I'm coming to a realization that my ability to alter this situation is done. For now, anyway. As far as I can see it. We tend to forget that people can reject you for any one of a number of their own personal reasons. Think how God must feel. He's done all this for us. He's died for us. And yet, it's safe to say that the majority of people either ignore him or don't believe in him or reshape him to their own sensibilities. It's really kind of a minority that decide he's real and that they devote their life to him. It's really kind of a minority. If you look at the statistics, if you look at the surveys, that's the way it is. So, in a sense, there's a parallel here between us realizing that we can't reach certain people other than through prayer, and God can't reach certain people other than through moving them through some mysterious effect of grace. That's it. So the next time somebody says, all you can do is pray, don't hear them as saying, well, that's the only thing you got left in your bag of tricks, you might as well turn to prayer. Maybe that's what they mean, but that's not the reality. The reality is everything else you've tried from a human perspective has failed. And understandably so, because you can't make anybody do anything they don't want to do without their cooperation unless you're willing to break the law. So you're right. Those of you listening to me with adult children who have left the faith, rejected the faith, and basically don't want to hear another word from you about the faith whatsoever, you've done all you can do. Maybe it's better said, rather than now you pray, it's better said you continue to pray as you have. When people call this program, what if every caller here who describes some life situation, I said to them, well, my advice to you is to pray. Every caller. Whatever it was, potty trained a kid, get along with an elderly parent, bring peace to their marriage. I say, well, I think the most powerful thing you can do is pray. Next caller, how long would you listen to this program? Come on, be honest. You wouldn't. There would be no one, first of all, who would listen, and no one who would call. Is that to say that prayer is not good in these situations? Not at all. It's to say that the people who call are saying, you got any ideas on what I can do here for myself or to reach someone else that seems unreachable? You got any ideas? And if the only thing I said was, well, yeah, pray, one of two objections could come out of that. One, I've been praying. You think I haven't thought about praying? I've been praying for years about this. Okay? So I'm only telling them to do something they've already been doing. And two, do you have no other idea on how to socially or emotionally or behaviorally or religiously reach them? You got don't have any other idea? If anybody came to my office and I just said, well, I think you need to pray. So pray for an hour, I'll charge you, and we'll go. First of all, nobody come to my office. Second of all, somebody would probably turn me in, basically saying I went and gave the guy money and he just told me to pray and he sat there for an hour. So, yes, prayer is part of everything. But it's not a bad thing to say, well, now you just have to pray. Because it's really saying you have to know when to accept a situation. Dr. Ray.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
You know, you go through certain phases in your life At age 20, you worry about what others think of you. At age 40, you don't care what they think of you. And finally, at age 60, you come to the realization they haven't been thinking about you at all. Ever notice that? Some of the social anxiety that people have, some of the nervousness, some of the tentativeness, the insecurity in social situations, is fear of what people are going to think. And take it from a shrink. This is a shrink think. Most of them aren't thinking about you at all. Or if they are, they don't really care about what you're experiencing. They're more immersed in their own experiences. All right, this is E-Person Monday. Very touching. Very, very touching from Tom. My 57-year-old wife passed away on January 24th of 2023. It is still very fresh in my heart, mind, and soul. I am still numb from the events that unfolded over the month of January. My wife, Glenda, was not feeling well and thought she should go to the ER. After numerous tests and scans, they found that she had lesions along her spine and her brain and also a mass in her lung. She was a non-smoker, so they called this type of cancer a mutated gene-type cancer. They discussed possible treatments. Sadly, she was not even able to start these treatments, nor even have a biopsy of the lung mass. Blood clots developed, went to her lung. Now they call that pulmonary embolisms. Last 2 hours, she was in the ICU. She only wanted me to rub her feet. However, I held her hand as she took her final breaths. I witnessed her eyes turn the most beautiful shade of blue, and she had the look of happiness, surprise, like she was seeing a long-lost friend. It brought me peace knowing that God had ready for her, since she so loved him. I go in and out most days now, sort of in a fog, torn between tears and anger and disbelief. I also try to be strong for my adult sons who took this really hard. I'm home alone now with our two dogs who keep me very busy, and they too are in mourning. I still wear my wedding ring after 30 years of a blessed and happy marriage. I'm finding it hard to even think about taking it off. We kept our vows truly, but why am I so reluctant to remove a ring that is a worldly symbol of that love that is now not of this world? I'm embarrassed to even think about asking my boys how they feel if I should consider no longer wearing the ring. This widower thing is something I never thought I'd have to face this soon. Our wedding song was, "Can I Have This Dance for the Rest of My Life?" I remember that song. Is it wrong that I don't want to get off the dance floor? I love her now more than ever. Several things, my friend. When you lose someone that close to you, all the rules are broken. You never experienced any feeling that intense, not even anger. Not that intense. C.S. Lewis compared it to being extremely hungry, almost borderline starving, like an emptiness deep in your gut. Hard to describe with words. This woman was your soulmate, center of your life. She's not there now, and it happened so fast. Didn't have the time to even prepare yourself that it was a possibility. So whatever you experience in the next year is to be expected. Expect to have ups and downs. Expect to get advice from well-meaning people that you just don't want to follow. You should get out more. No, you need to stay home and relax, and everybody trying to help, but this is a journey right now. For a while you're going to walk. Maybe you can get some consolation in knowing that your lovely wife, who loved the Lord so much, you can be pretty confident she's probably with him now. You can be, even in the midst of your great, great sorrow, you can be happy for her. No, it won't overcome your sorrow, but it'll give you a little glimmer that I'm so glad for my wife that's most likely where she is. On to the wedding ring. You're not the first person that I have talked to or heard say this. It's not a worldly symbol. It's something we recognize as our commitment. And the fact that you love her every bit as much, of course you do. And you want to wear the ring. Why would you not? I don't think this is all a question of wrongful mourning or a lack of moving on. I don't think any of that applies. I think you're saying, it reminds me of what we had in our lives. It reminds me of who she was for me. That's why I wear it. So I can look down on it and I can say, she meant so much to me. I understand totally how you feel about this, Tom. I look ahead to my own life, and if myself or my wife, we don't know which one would be the first one to go, or if we both go at the same time, but I'd keep that ring on. Catch myself after that one, huh? All right. Last time I got teary-eyed like that, the Browns called a draw play on 3rd and 12 in the playoffs. I couldn't believe they did that. Oh, man. Dr. Ray, I have a bad pattern where my son and my wife asked me not to do anything. Now, this is interesting because this is very circumscribed behavior. Have asked me not to do anything with our son's lambs. Apparently this young man raises lambs. Unless I ask. But I do it anyway without asking. I enjoy helping to a fault, but this is causing major strife. Example is treating my son's show lamb, his hurt ear, without asking my son before treating it. It's like I do the things I know I shouldn't, but don't do the things they ask of me. Yeah, you and St. Paul. I have just started asking myself before doing anything, what impact will this have to our family? Well, that's a pretty good start. It's like this. Dad, you've been doing this. You've been getting feedback. Okay, ask first. If nothing else, just show your son that little bit of acknowledgement. It's his lamb. Before I do this, son, I want to make sure that you're on board with this, or that we'll do it together. Okay. He goes on. Today's gospel was very helpful. Sometimes we may need incremental healing. Perhaps we're not ready for a complete healing. Well, I don't know about you, Dad, but I haven't been completely healed of any particular sins. Well, maybe some. But for the most part, the personal type stuff, you know, that you do to rub people the wrong way or say things you shouldn't or whatever, those everyday kind of, I don't want to say nitpicking because they're not nitpicking, they're not even trivial. Those everyday sins, those are something that you deal with inch by inch the rest of your life. He says, I probably wouldn't know how to act if healing came all at once. My family wants it yesterday. Perhaps God knows how and when and how much to heal us. Well, I'd say this, Dad. Commit publicly. Go to your son, go to your wife, and say, guys, all right. Can you say guys talking to your wife? You used to be able to. Now you're not allowed anymore. Do it anyway. I got into a bad habit here. Acting without consulting. Tell you what I want to do. I want to commit to you that I'm going to, before I do anything, I'm going to ask myself first, did I talk it over? That's what I'll do. Now, that doesn't mean we'll always agree, but at least I'm going to acknowledge, first of all, this is your lamb, and I'll ask first. Now, they're probably not going to believe you because you've got a pattern. You said you have a pattern. But at least if you come out and say it, they will be persuaded that you recognize what you've been doing. Sometimes that softens people more than anything else when you say, I know I've been doing this. I know I act this way. I know I say this. It gives them hope that your self-awareness will lead to some kind of change. Because much of the time when people get frustrated with us, it's because not only do we do the things we probably shouldn't do, but we don't acknowledge that we do that. We're defensive or unaware. Anything but saying, yeah, you're right, I do that. And it's fascinating, and I think you were quoting St. Paul. It's like I do the things I know I shouldn't do, but I don't do the things asked of me. Yeah, when we get into that kind of pattern with other people, underneath it all is, I want to do it my way. There's nothing more complex than that. I want to do it the way that I want to do it. Thing I've noticed as I'm getting older, the most important thing I found to remember is that I'm probably going to forget. Finally come to that conclusion. This is E-Person Monday on The Doctor Is In, where we attempt, well, you don't attempt, I do, but you send the E-Persons to look at some of these missives, and I can't say missives, Ms-ives. And, boy, it's really a pain watching your language as it changes every 2.5 hours. From you. You get a lot of these, many from the radio show and many from the TV show. Hello from Australia, Dr. Ray. I suppose I could try to read this with a bit of an accent. Hello from Australia. I'm a young 24-year-old mother of two. Oh, you're being redundant. You don't have to say young 24. I know. Anything under 45 is young to me. And I've been in contact with you before, actually. Oh, okay. My problem relates not to my own children, but to my 3-year-old niece. Her mum... Now, see, you can tell that's Australian talk. Mum, M-U-M. My sister-in-law and I are best friends. We've been friends for a very long time. She was my maid of honor at my wedding. Okay, must be her husband's sister. My niece, this is the 3-year-old, has always been well beyond her years. Spoke early, walked early, very advanced, especially compared to my 2-year-old son. Well, yeah, I know, but girls talk earlier. They talk better. They talk longer. Lately, when I invite them over for a play date, she is always so incredibly, now incredibly is capitalized, so she must be incredibly, incredibly rude, bossy, very demanding. She's ruling him. I put that one in there. She's ruling him. She'll jump all over my couch, which is not allowed in our house. When she's eating at the table, she'll lay all over the chairs, dropping food for me to clean up. She'll pull all the toys into her room, not pick up when asked to. Or if I'm making lunch, ask her what she'll like, she just outright ignore me. I know she can hear me, standing right next to me. When she does speak rudely to me, I correct her by saying, no, you can't have this, you didn't use your manners. She'll rephrase the question, I'll give her what she requested. I don't know if I should give it to her or not, to be honest, but for some reason I feel pressure, because I feel like if I don't, it's coming across as discipline. Yeah, I know, you're putting a consequence on her. Her mum is present through all of this, but doesn't do anything about it. Okay. My question is, I don't think anybody but a parent can or should discipline their child. I think it's way out of line for me to do that. However, when they are at my house and she does this stuff, not only is it disrespectful for me to be spoken to like that, especially when I'm about 3-year-old, but it's often done in front of my son. That's okay. Probably feel a little easier, Mom. He's a 2-year-old boy. Probably oblivious most of the time. I do get concerned on the example she's setting for him. Well, no, don't be worried about that. Let me address this in a second. Let me finish up with your e-person. I wouldn't let my son talk to anybody like that, especially an adult or family member. He would instantly be sent to sit in the car. That's right. So you really don't have to worry that she's going to influence him. He may see it and he may try it, but he'll find out that with his mom it doesn't go anywhere. So that's not a concern. The bigger question is, how far do you go in putting some limits on this girl when her mother's standing right there? And she asks this. She says, what level of discipline is appropriate for me to have with other children in my home? I enjoy my sister-in-law's company, but I am enjoying her daughter's company less and less after each visit. She then concludes, the only positive to this situation is when she leaves, I'm just so incredibly grateful for how sweet, placid, and obedient my son is, despite his 2-year-old moments. Not biased. Okay. Well, I'm going to try to do this without an Australian accent. Of course, I'm going to try to do a readabout. That's the same as a walkabout, just not quite the ambulatory part of it. I think you're good to put limits on her. You don't have to put a consequence on her. In other words, if she's disrespectful, you might say in front of Mom, I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you were saying. You were disrespectful. Now, you're not putting limits, but you are essentially passively saying the way you're doing this is not going to get you anywhere. You're not saying, go stand in the corner, go sit in the chair. Or you can do this. This is a little trickier, but I think it's a good idea. She pulls all the toys out. I'm going to assume your son is playing with her. You can say, well, son, I don't know what your son's name is, but let's call him Will. Will, come on, we're going to go in there and pick up the toys. In other words, what you're doing it, without saying it, is you're showing your sister-in-law, I operate out of different standards here with my son. I would bet, like many, many, many young parents, probably the majority of young parents, I'd say even most of them, they just don't discipline well. They don't. If you want to call it gentle parenting, whatever it is they call it, they just don't. And so the child is allowed to be obnoxious and unpleasant at the very time that it would be easiest to teach them. You know, at some point when this little girl's 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, if mom hasn't done much about this, if this is a reflective of her overall style, this girl's going to be obnoxious. And then mom's going to be frustrated. Wondering, what happened? I just got stuck with this child that's strong-willed. So, what I would do is, for example, if she's bossy and rude to your son, and your son either is rude back, then you sit him. Say, no, we don't talk to people that way. In other words, what you're doing is you're showing your sister-in-law, here's what I'm going to do with my children. Hopefully, it will get through to her. Hopefully, it will embarrass her. And she'll realize she needs to start doing something about it because your son is the only one getting disciplined in the interaction with this little girl. And any time, for example, you say, what would you like? And she doesn't answer you. Then you don't put anything on the table and you say to your sister-in-law, and in the most gentle, sweet voice, I just thought she didn't want anything because I asked her and she didn't answer. Be dumb. You can make your case in a lot of ways without actually putting a consequence on this little girl's behavior. Get creative about it. I hope you can get this in Australia. Obviously you do. You wrote me. But you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray Grandy. Program here. The doctor is in. This particular variant of the doctor is in is E-Person Monday. So let me go to the phone. Let's see what we got here regarding... okay, I don't know that one. Let's see if we can find another one. There's one. Okay, here we go. A few months ago, we provided respite care for a little boy, and my two children did not get along with him. Now, a respite care, I'm going to assume that this respite, and again, I need to know some details, so I'm just going to throw out some possibilities, was for a week or two because this was a foster situation or perhaps a family situation where the parents needed a break or they were leaving town or some reason that you watched this child. Recently, I was asked to provide respite again for that little boy. And I asked my children, ages 7 and 5, whether they are okay with that, that I bring him back. They both vehemently said no. Her question is this: is it a valid reason to not take in a child if your own children are against it? Well, I can give you a very definitive maybe about that. First of all, I would want to know why they didn't get along with him. Now, when you said little boy, I'm going to assume he was either younger than them or near their age. He wasn't an 11-year-old. Because my biggest concern about providing respite care for a child who is much more worldly than my own, even if he's their age, would be their innocence. They're only 5 and 7. So, if the question is, in fact, he introduced to them behaviors that are immoral, or worldly or sexual, something that would be way beyond your 5-year-old and 7-year-old's level of innocence, then I personally would be reluctant to provide respite care. When my wife and I adopted, one of the rules we had was we really didn't want to adopt anybody older than our children because of their innocence. Now, we did do that at a couple points. We adopted a couple 4-year-olds when we had a 3- and a 1-year-old. But the 1-year-old we knew was rather oblivious to everything here, and we figured we could deal with any complications with the 3-year-old, and the 4-year-olds were not worldly. They were bratty, but they weren't worldly. Now, here's the other side of it. If your 5- and 7-year-old simply didn't like somebody else being there that they had to share their toys with, or they had to not fight with, or they had to compromise with regarding what they wanted to do and what you thought they all could do, then I probably would say they need to find out a little bit how to get along with somebody. If it's a matter of, we don't want him here because this is our house and because we like doing things our way, and we don't really like to have to give of ourselves to this kid, then I would probably, I'm not telling you what to do, but I'd probably say, no, he's coming here and I'm going to help you get along with him because we're doing a good thing. When my mother-in-law was in a moderate stage of dementia before she went to the memory care units, she was at our house for 3 years. Now, at that time, I think we had eight of the kids still at home. One had gone to college. Actually, we had 8 of them still at home. One had gone to college, one had gone to the military. Nope, that's not true either. Forgive me. We had 9 of the kids at home. We have 4 bedrooms. One was for my wife. One was for my mother-in-law. And that left 2 bedrooms for the other 9 kids. 3 of the boys slept on the floor in sleeping bags in the walk-through closet. They did it to sacrifice for their grandma. Now, was that bad? No. My wife and I decided that was a good thing. They learned that grandma's here, she needs to be taken care of, and we're all sacrificing to do it.
Ray, you didn't get out of your bed.
No, because I'm old and I wouldn't have been able to get off the floor the next day. But they were all between, 10 and 14, something like that. So, if you think, here's the long and the short of my answer, forgive the cliche. If you think this is good for your kids to learn to get along and compromise, maybe this little boy is 3 or 4 years old, and he presents no morality or worldly loss of innocence for your 5- and 7-year-old, then you bring him in. Now, I have heard experts say, if the kids are against something you want to do, small example, I heard an expert on a national radio show, not Catholic media, mother called in, said she wanted to adopt her daughter. She had 1 child, a girl, obviously, said, no, I don't, it's all just us. I don't want you to adopt anybody else. And the expert said, if your daughter is against this, then you can't do it. I thought that was absolutely absurd advice. Since when do we give children an equal vote on matters like that? What if your daughter's against going to a school that you want her to go to? What if your daughter is against, what else? Having to move because you or your husband got transferred. We make a lot of life decisions, and yeah, you can consider the input, but the final vote for most of them is up to the parent. We really didn't ask our kids if they wanted us to adopt again. We were going to, And fortunately, most of them were pretty excited about it. They got used to it. But by and large, in this situation, Mom, you have to decide what was the reason for your kids not wanting this little guy there. Moral, worldly, okay, then protect them. Otherwise, they could learn to sacrifice a little bit to do a good thing. Dr. Ray. Dr. Ray Guarini, thank you so very much for joining me. The last segment of The Doctor Is In, the last segment of the variant of The Doctor Is In. I was just informed of a tweet from a doctor who said that she had gotten all the booster shots of COVID, and she got COVID anyway. She was very upset about that. Okay, I would think that as a doctor, she would know. She would know that indeed these shots don't prevent infection. That's pretty obvious. All right. Dr. Ray, your advice on letting others, on not letting others ruin your joy is great. However, I was hoping you could give some examples or suggestions on how to attain this. Of course, this is the how do you do it? Well, so many how-tos have to be underlined by a will to. You got to want to. You got to basically say, here's the analogy I use. Look back 20 years. Do you think now about things like you thought 20 years ago? If not, how did you change those attitudes? How did you change those perceptions? Did you use some strategy, some how-to? Probably not. Over time, you thought your way out of that. You said, this is ridiculous to think this way. Or, I don't have evidence to think this way. Or, why am I thinking this way? It's only making me miserable. You did a lot of things in your own head to change your way of viewing things. She says, my parents divorced 12 years ago when my three siblings and I were in our 20s. Since then, my dad has lied about having terminal cancer. He married a woman after 6 months of knowing her, moved to other countries multiple times, and recently divorced again. Final straw for me was getting arrested in Mexico, meaning him, and learning he's been lying about his finances and stayed in life to attract younger women. I'm having trouble not thinking about this. Help. Well, I think what you're saying is I can't believe that he would do this, especially someone who is my father. Why does this bother you, Carla? Not her real name, by the way. Now, I understand that some of you say, Dr. Ray, you're a psychologist. You should know why it bothers her. I understand that. What I mean to say is you've had years and years of seeing that he's capable of doing all kinds of things that are deceptive, that are unfatherlike. You've seen this. Can you say to yourself, this is crazy stuff, but I didn't do it. It's no reflection upon me. And yes, I don't have the father that I would like. Yes. But in terms of letting this eat at you, perhaps day in and day out, the technique that I would give you is, you've got to start thinking it through in a much more reasonable, rational way. How is that, Dr. A? For example, obviously, the man who is my father is capable of this. Obviously, he's done it. He's lied, he's cheated. He can't hold a relationship together. My mother left him, or he left her, whatever. Reflecting once again his conduct. I could not choose my father. I couldn't go looking through an album when I was born to say, yeah, I want that one right there. He looks pretty good. Let me see that personality profile. Ooh, that's pretty mature. You couldn't do that. So, in fact, you're put in a position in life that your father, the man who is involved in your worldly creation, is like this. And I think what you're doing is, when will it end? When will he stop doing these kinds of things? Well, I think another strategy is to probably tell yourself, I don't know when it'll end. It may not end as long as he lives on this earth, and I can't do anything about ending it. See, that's the kind of stuff that's got to sink in. Dr. E, I can tell myself that, but I don't believe it. Well, you better start telling yourself that over and over, so ultimately you do believe it. I'm going to assume you're a religious person. How did you come to believe as deeply as you did? Why? Because you looked at this, and you told yourself, there's plenty of evidence that this is true. There's plenty of evidence that this works, that this is a beautiful way to live. You convinced yourself of that. You didn't need any strategies. You knew. You thought it through. You kept thinking it through. Same thing with your dad. You got to keep thinking it through. I can't control him. He can do whatever he wants. Unfortunately, he does a lot of things that I don't understand or at all agree with. My poor mom. But at this point, if you expect him to stop, I think you're going to get real frustrated. Thank you for joining me, Dr. Ray. Delighted to have you with me. Thanks, Editor Krucek. Good Lord permitting, I'll see you tomorrow. Walk with God. He is stable.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.